Is it okay to just follow the crowd, or is there a potential problem with that? Find out next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy, and I'm also the Executive Director of Camp American. My usual host today, Barry Sheets, is indisposed. He's busy on projects, so I have been left once again to host the program. And I chose to continue the theme we started last week with Dr. Michael Kaufman, who is a PhD in environmental ecology. And he has written several books. He is a person who has a number of interests in areas including ecology and also social theory, because he is a Christian man, and we all Christians should have some kind of interest in how our faith affects our world around us. And Dr. Kaufman has that. What he is talking about is his book, Plundered. It's a very good book. We have copies of it available here. Not too many, I don't think, but we do have some copies available here, and I think we have them on our store. So once you hear this, you may want to run out and get a copy. You can get a copy from us. We'd appreciate it. It would raise a little money for the Institute for Principled Policy. You know, we do get a commission on some of the books we sell through our Amazon store. So in any case, what Dr. Kaufman will be talking about is sort of the crowd mentality and how the crowd mentality can be manipulated to create essentially a mob. And it'll start in a place that may not seem to make sense. Well, the problem is that this is a presentation that's based on a PowerPoint presentation. And if you want copies of the video, which actually has the PowerPoint presentation embedded in it, you can go to www.campamerican.com. That's www.campamerican.com. And you can get copies of this film, and it's a fundraiser for Camp American. You can buy copies of the DVD, and it has all Dr. Kaufman's PowerPoint presentations. Dr. Kaufman will start out with a discussion of a French philosopher, sociologist, psychologist, physicist, kind of a man of all trades, who wrote a book called The Crowd, in which he discusses the dynamics of the crowd and explains it in terms of how a crowd can be manipulated. It's a very important book. People don't know about it much anymore, but it's a very important look. In any case, here is Dr. Michael Kaufman with Plundered.
Okay. You can turn it down a bit. The Crowd is what the title of the book is. And basically, he analyzes what is going on in Europe. He's a Frenchman. Had been doing a lot of studies on this, and what he found was there was common characteristics. Now, he did not call it progressivism because the term hadn't been identified yet, but he describes the progressive movement to a T. And what he said, and I'll just summarize some of the things that he said, that sentiments and ideas of all the persons involved take one and the same direction, and their conscious personality vanishes. They all become basically the same. A collective mind is formed, but presenting a very clearly defined characteristics. It is no longer himself, but has become an automaton. In other words, everybody does exactly the same thing, who has ceased to be guided by his will. They're acting as a group. They most often have only a very distant relation with the observed fact. And I'm going to be going into some of that later on this evening. But what we're finding is, your parents may realize it, that so much of what they do doesn't seem to be connected to reality today. Well, it was the same way back 100 and some odd years ago. They don't have a connection to reality. They literally are disconnected from reality. They have built their own reality. And the only way it has worked in the past is that they've been able to throw more and more money at it, to make it, to force it to work. Well, folks, we're out of money. It's what he calls collective hallucination. They have a sense of invincible power. And we have seen that, especially with the labor unions in recent decades, basically assuming that what they want, they're going to get. And that's especially true with the public unions. Contagion of thought. One person has a thought, and by the next day, everybody is regurgitating the same thing. An individual sacrifices his personal interest to the collective interest. They may be very nice people on an individual basis, but as a group, they are vicious. They commit, act in utter contradiction with their own characteristic and habits. Utter contradiction. The mere fact that they form a part of an organized crowd, or what we would today call a mob, a man descends several rungs in the ladder of civilization. Isolated, he may be a cultivated individual. In a crowd, he is a barbarian. At public meetings, the slightest contradiction on the part of an orator is immediately received with howls of fury and violent invective, soon followed by blows, the expulsion, should the orator stick to his point. How many times have we seen conservatives on college campuses in the last 10 years especially, never able to finish their speech because the students, who have been literally indoctrinated with this stuff, will not let him speak? I mean, it is so classic an illustration of this mentality that you cannot deny it. Without the restraining presence of representatives of authority, the contradictor, the one that disagrees with the mob, indeed would often be done to death. And I have seen, and we'll see some later on, video clips of it, where literally people would be killed. Just as Rousseau talks about in his social contract that we talked about this morning, if there wasn't the rule of law confining them, restraining them. It is really very serious, folks. And what did I just do? Now, the last thing I want to leap into the next subject is say that he basically said this, that he talks about Rousseau. This is in 1895. Rousseau penned his documents in the mid-1700s. The French Revolution started in 1792. So he is reflecting back on that. And he says that Rousseau's philosophical ideas, which resulted in the French Revolution, took nearly a century to implant themselves. The striving of an entire nation towards the conquest of social equality, which we now call social justice. You'll see this in the newspapers and the evening news and so forth many times. Obama talks about it all the time. And the realization of abstract rights and ideal liberties caused the tottering of all thrones and profoundly disturbed the Western world. As he just mentioned, Rousseau's ideas and philosophies are at the heart of the French Revolution. And basically, it always results in violence, sometime or another. In the case of the French Revolution, it took over almost 100 years, about 60 years, 70 years, to finally mature into the force that it was. I think it was helped. I'm not going to get into that. I think there was a provocateur type of effort trying to make it happen. But the people were ripe to let it happen. And folks, we're becoming ripe right now. It's really astonishing as to how much or how close we're getting to violence here in this country. But the French Revolution, one of these days you need to read about it. And don't read about it in your high school textbook because it will not be accurate. But the French Revolution basically was one of the most violent wars that we have in modern history. People seem to think that Hitler's killing of 6 million Jews was really bad, and it was. But it was nothing compared to the French Revolution. There was so much violence that not only were people beheaded, but people were literally torn apart while they were alive. Their limbs pulled off, one with two horses and legs and so forth, literally pulled off while they were still alive. That was violence beyond anything that I could possibly imagine. And while there was only a couple hundred thousand people that were killed during the French Revolution, it's what we call this morning the terror. It was what it was called. It was the terror. Because people didn't know what was going to happen next. It only lasted a couple of years.
So often there's cases like that. The very fomenters are themselves killed.
Yes, and that was true in this case too.
Yeah, the main guy, I'm trying to
remember. Robespierre?
Was the one of the main instigators. And that's what happened when Lenin and Stalin took over in Russia. Anybody who helped them were the first to be killed.
Yeah. Yep. It is, I can't say enough bad things about this belief system. In recent years, in 1973, Saul Alinsky wrote what is called the Rules for Radicals. And it's become literally the Bible for the progressive movement. It is still being used today. It's being sold by the millions for progressives. And it outlines how to go about to topple a government. And in this process, in this book, he talks about, and it's dedicated, quote, to the very first radical known to a man who rebelled against the establishment and did so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom, Lucifer. Also known as Satan, devil, whatever you want to call him. Lucifer, the name Lucifer means the rebellious one. And of course, he rebelled from God. So it's dedicated to Lucifer, and boy, I'm telling you, if you wanted to create a world based on what Lucifer would want to see, this is it. Just read the book. In this book, we are concerned with how to create mass organizations to seize power and give it to the people. It's always under the banner of giving it to the people. Almost every one of the communist nations started with mass movements at the ground floor of people in order for them to gain power. Of course, it never happens because once the old order is taken out of power, the new order, made up of just a few individuals, seizes that power and does exactly the same thing as what they just rebelled against. The Muslim Brotherhood is a good example. We haven't seen it yet in Egypt, but we will. A Marxist, it goes on to say, a Marxist begins with his prime truth that all evils are caused by the exploitation of the proletariat by the capitalist. From this, he logically proceeds to the revolution to end capitalism and then the third stage of reorganization into a new social order of the dictatorship. Notice the dictatorship of the proletariat. That's the group of people that runs everything. And finally, the last stage, the political paradise of communism. So what we're seeing here today as its root, because they are following Saul Alinsky, is to institute communism ultimately here in the United States. That's been always their goal. And there are some progressives that are more willing to share that information than others. The third rule of the ethics of means, that's, he has various ethics of means and ends, is that in war, the ends justify almost any means. What that basically means is that you can't trust them on anything. They will say, they will do anything. They will say anything to convince you that they're really not that bad. They really want to help people. They really want to do all these things. And then, of course, when they get the power, they do just the opposite. Because they never intended to do those things. To them, lying is perfectly natural. It's a means to an end, and they will do anything to achieve that end. Now, what has this resulted in? Europe has been pretty much socialistic now for 50 or 60 years, since World War II. And we have now come to the end. Socialism only works as long as you can spend somebody else's money. But that money has now been spent. Greece, for instance, will have lost 25% of its gross domestic product by year's end. There is no way they can recover. When you lose the means of recovery, you can't recover. And if they no longer can produce a product or a society that's going to be productive, they can't recover. And you can throw billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars at them, and all you're doing is basically supporting their demise. They are not going to make it. There's got to be some radical changes within Greece. In Greece, you can retire at age 55 on a full salary. That's not sustainable, folks. And now they're paying the piper. And unfortunately, they don't want to pay the piper because they're used to this. And they're now rioting. And I'll show you some scenes of that in a moment. Even with all the bailouts, it can't survive. It's doomed. There is not an economist in the world that I believe that will. So why are they continuing to fund it? Because if once they let Greece go, it creates a domino effect throughout Europe. Because banks own a lot of Greek debt, and all of a sudden their balance sheet will go from positive to negative. And banks can't do that. They've already written down Greek's debt by 75%. In other words, they're taking a 75% hit. And they're going to have to take a 100% hit. And even then, because Greece no longer has much of a gross domestic product, they're not going to survive. The citizens refuse to accept the austerity and have rioted. There's two steps to austerity. One is they have to get their social house in order. They have to stop this ridiculous entitlement benefits that they've established through socialism. That is one thing they have to do. The other thing that they're being forced to do is to raise taxes on the rich. And what happens when you raise taxes on the rich? You lose your productivity. They've lost 25% of their productivity. They don't know why. Well, it's because the rich, when you take it from the rich, they can't create new jobs. Or they move offshore. Yeah. Spain is receiving a 125 trillion euro bailout. But they're owed 3 trillion euros. 3 trillion euros that are coming due in the next year. There's no way they can be bailed out. Italy is just one micro step behind them. There is no way that they're going to survive. Not under the cross. I mean, they will survive as a nation. Don't get me wrong. It's just they're going to go through a depression or either that or unbelievable inflation over the next several years. They also refuse austerity and have rioted. Italy is in the same condition. Italy is so close, I really expected Italy to go down first, but it's been Spain that did it. France is not too far behind, and they just elected a new president that has reinstated much of the entitlement programs that brought their trouble in France. They can't sustain that. They just can't. England, last year, raised its retirement age from 60 to 62. You shake your head, and why do they have it at 60? But 62 isn't so bad. That's usually where ours kick in. But they, English, rioted, and I'll show you some slides of that or video of that in a moment, but it's unbelievable what reactions this are getting in Europe. And it's one step away from the United States, one small step. Sweden. Now, Sweden has historically been known as the most socialistic nation in Europe. They had entitlement benefits and, I mean, cradle to grave care and so forth. 7 years ago, they realized it was bankrupting them. Surprise, surprise. And they elected a government, this is really against human nature, that was committed to bringing it back into a solvency situation. And they have experienced austerity over the last 7 years. They have cut back on their taxes on corporations and small businesses. They have literally shrunk the entitlement programs, dramatically shrunk them. And guess what happened? They didn't go through all this. when the rest of Europe was on fire, or is on fire right now, they're doing fine. Their gross domestic product in 2010 and 2011 was twice that of the United States. Why? Because they shrunk their government.
Another place is New Zealand.
New Zealand did the same thing, and so did Canada. It's not as pronounced because they didn't dig as deep, but it's still there. Okay. Show you what some of the... This in Greek...
London to Birmingham, Liverpool, there are isolated incidents in Bristol and other cities. At the epicenter of this sort of firestorm of rioting, it remains in London. Last night it spread to some really quite affluent areas in South and West London. We saw, and you probably see over there, some extraordinary pictures of gangs, of hundreds of often masked youths rioting through the streets, setting shops alight, looting, widespread looting, and in many cases, according to local residents, the police either arrived too late, or when they did arrive, were simply unable to confront the numbers and the apparent level of organization that the rioters are deploying. Widespread criticism from residents, as I said, politicians are cancelling their summer vacations, Prime Minister...
The message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place. The focus is on Wall Street, and justifiably so. And God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming. It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
There's this movement, Occupy Wall Street, right, which has spread from Wall Street to other cities. Are you following this movement, and what would you say to its people that are attracted to it?
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel, that we had the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression, huge collateral damage all throughout the country, all across Main Street, and yet, you're still seeing some of the same folks who acted irresponsibly trying to fight efforts to crack down on abusive practices that got us into this problem in the first place. So, yes, I think people are frustrated, and you know, the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration about how our financial system works.
What happened?
He got
shot. What's your name?
What's your name?
I don't have time to go into a lot of detail. It's in the book. But first of all, It wasn't Wall Street that caused the collapse. It was Congress that caused the collapse through a, and it was the progressives that passed laws, both Republican and Democrat, that passed laws through the last 30 years that basically allowed this to happen and forced the banking community into giving these loans that cannot be paid back. And then they took out the Glass-Steagall Act, which had separated the banking and financial systems so that the kind of corruption that occurred would not occur. They did away with that in 19. Both political parties did this. It was during Clinton's administration, but the Republicans were right in there with them and basically allowed a free fall or just an incredible open door for corruption to occur within the banking system. And it does. Whenever you take a situation where you have allowed greed to take control, it will happen. But it was Congress that did this. And you will find every congressman in Congress denying that they had any responsibility in this. And the mainstream media will not report it. It was them. It was the progressives that allowed that to happen. And you heard our president basically saying the total fault was on the Tea Party movement. He didn't label them Tea Party, but that's what he said. That we have people that are still fighting this, fighting our solutions. You know what their solution was? Was the Financial Reform Act back 2 years ago. The Financial Reform Act actually puts the global elite in control of our economy. I'll explain more tomorrow when I get to it. But the fact is that it allows the Federal Reserve to oversee our economy. And the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England basically control the central banks of the world. It is unbelievable how they are doing this, and nobody is the wiser. They created these riots, I think deliberately, but I don't know that. I don't have any evidence to prove that. But they want to establish a new global currency, so they have to tear down what exists today. Now, I'm telling you this not to scare you, but to motivate you. Now, I would assume that most of you are Christians. If you're not, you really need to seriously think about it. Because we are heading into a time of trouble, or very likely. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I don't like that kind of trouble any more than anybody else does. But the fact is, we are so hollowed out right now that if Europe goes down, it's going to hit us like a truckload of bricks. And we're going to be in trouble, too, financially. 53% of our wealth is in Europe. We own $10 trillion of European debt. $10 trillion. What happens when the banks of Europe fail? What happens when the nations fail? That $10 trillion is gone. Well, I don't want to get into derivatives. But derivatives basically are what caused much of the collapse in 2008. They shouldn't even be allowed. They're nothing but speculation. But there are greedy people out there that want them and have convinced Congress to allow them to happen. It all goes back to Congress. They're not greedy banks. There are greedy bankers. And we do need mechanisms of control. The Glass-Steagall Act worked very well until they revoked it in 2000. But it was Congress that revoked it. I can't emphasize that enough. Congress is responsible for almost all the problems that we have right now. And greedy people. Now, we get into the public-private partner or sector wages issue. We heard about the Scott Walker recall that he successfully won. Amen is right, in Wisconsin. And Scott Walker did the right thing. He basically broke the back of the public union and also was able to reorganize many of the things that actually prevented the laying off of firemen, police, and teachers, even though they said that if he won, they'd be all laid off. They're not. What he did is basically he forced them to start paying into their medical insurance and retirement, 6%. The average in the private industry is 6 to 12%. So he didn't even go as high as the average in the private sector. And he brought his state out of a deficit situation, severe deficit situation, into a surplus. And that's what this country needs to do. Sweden did it, and it worked. We did it in 1900, or 1921, the forgotten depression. Got out of it in a year and a half. It was worse than what we are in right now. But anyway, the average private salary is $50,000. The public average salary is $79,000. These are for equivalent jobs. $59,000, almost $60,000 for base plus fringe. For the private, $120,000 for the public sector. Everything is out of balance. Now, we talked about greed. We have almost nightly fingers being pointed at bankers and big companies and so forth for their greediness. And some of them are. But look at the public sector. That's greed, folks.
You might want to explain what the public sector is.
Public sector would be your firemen, your teachers, your public employees, I should say. I don't have anything against them. I like the police. I like the firemen. Boy, without them, it would be chaos. But at the same time, they need to be in balance with the private sector. You have the private sector that are paying their salaries. And so you and I that work in the private sector are giving them salaries and benefits that are in some cases twice that of what we're getting. And we are paying them. You talk about fairness, that's totally inequitable. Now, the other thing is the top 1% that we hear so much about, they pay 40% of our taxes. That's fair. They want them to pay more. If you include the top 2 to 5%, that's another 20%. So now you're up to 60% in the top 5% category of our wage earners in this country, our income earners. The top 6 to 25% is another 26%. So now you're up to 66%. And then finally, another 10% on the 50% plus. You know how much the bottom 50% pay? 2.8%. And they're saying they're being taxed unfairly, that we need to tax the rich more. I think already it's not fair. And yet the media continues to basically prop up this kind of class warfare. I don't care what they say, it is class warfare to a T. And class warfare rarely turns out very good. Now, if you look at our debt, these are almost entirely due to the progressive movement, entitlements, and so forth. Our total national debt now is $15.8 trillion. I'll show you what that looks like in a minute. That's a lot of money. The debt per taxpayer is $139,000 per taxpayer. How soon do you think that's going to be paid off? Now, the federal budget deficit this year is another $1.3 trillion. As I said this morning, it's going to be over $5 trillion in the 4 years of Obama's administration, more than all the former presidents up to President Bush. with 1 4-year term. Because he believes, I think with all his heart, that we have to spend our way out of debt. Now go figure that. But remember, progressives in general don't connect to reality. Now, if you look at basically the unfunded mandates like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, it's $119 trillion. The gross domestic product of the entire world is about $65 trillion. You see a problem here? It's huge. And yet every time the conservatives try to develop a system to get us out of this mess, the progressive liberals especially, fight it every inch of the way. Basically, you've seen the commercial or the ad where who's supposed to be Ryan, Representative Ryan from Wisconsin, is pushing his mother off of a cliff. They base everything that they do on emotion. Everything is emotion. And they can nullify the reality of the world with one ad like that showing grandma's being pushed off the cliff. But I'll show you what the real cliff is. The real cliff is going to come in about 8 to 10 years when all of a sudden we can't support that $119 trillion debt. And then there won't be any money for any Social Security, any Medicare, or any Medicaid. You talk about going off a cliff. We're going to get there all right, but it's not going to be the conservatives that get us there. It's going to be the progressives. Because they refuse to deal with it. Well, why do they refuse to deal with it? Oh, that's $1 million per taxpayer. It is so bizarre that it's almost unrealistic. They do not think that's a serious problem. Let me just give you an image of what that looks like. On the top, you have one $100 bill. The bottom, you have 10,000 $100 bills. You have $1 million $100 bills. $1 trillion $100 bills. Well, that was a million? Oh, yeah. Okay, this is $1 trillion $100 bills. That's what $1 trillion would look like in $100 bills. This is $15 trillion $100 bills. This is the same $15 trillion except compared to the old World Trade Center. This is $115 trillion bills, $100 bills. It's astronomical. The only way we can pay that off is either to go bankrupt, which isn't really paying it off, or basically to inflate our way out of it, to double, triple, and so forth our inflation rates so that $100 today would only be worth 5 or 10 cents within a few years. That's how they've gotten out of debt in the past. Now, this is our former presidential candidate, John Kerry, on the Morning Joe program on August 5th last year. And this is what he said.
The debt deal that we just did is barely a scratch on the surface of what we need to do. We have to change the minds of those people in the House of Representatives who have appropriately focused on the deficit and debt, but who have completely inappropriately left out any kind of plans whatsoever for how you create jobs and grow America.
Notice he's blaming the Republicans, specifically conservatives, for the mess that we're in. The Republicans, according to him, have offered no solid way to create jobs. I'm sorry, the Republican House of Representatives have offered bill after bill after bill to free up our free enterprise system so that it'll create more jobs. But what we're seeing here is that the Republicans, he's blaming the Republicans, and this happens every single time, and the American people believe it. Because they say that what the Republican ideas don't work, so they don't even consider them as an idea. When in fact, it's their ideas that have never worked.
I mean, we literally, everybody's talked about it. Yes, the Congress was taken hostage, the country, the economy was taken hostage. You had people there who were literally ready to cut the baby in half. I mean, I've heard a lot of criticism of the president. Frankly, the president had no choice here. Congress had no choice here. We did the same thing the president had to do, which is save America from a default, because a default would have been far more disastrous. And what we have...
Would it? No. It would be hard. It would create a real some pain. Yes. 5 minutes? I hadn't even got through 10 slides yet. All right. She's a real task maker, let me tell you. But nonetheless, what he's saying is that the debt crisis last August was created by the Republicans, really more specifically by the Tea Party, refusing to increase the debt ceiling some more so they can spend more money and get us deeper in the debt. That's what the Tea Party candidates were elected to do. And yet they're being blamed for everything. The blame shifting of the progressives in Congress is unbelievable. They can basically turn white into black and black into white. Of course, they have the media to help them.
It was a group of people who are completely unaware or didn't care about the consequences of their actions. They were actually arguing for a default, which would have been even more catastrophic with respect to what's happening in Europe and what's happening here at home now. So we have to break that. And I have to tell you, I say this to you politely, the media in America has a bigger responsibility than it's exercising today. The media has got to begin to not give equal time or equal balance to an absolutely absurd notion just because somebody asserts it, or simply because somebody says something which everybody knows is not factual. It doesn't deserve the same credit as a legitimate idea about what you do. And the problem is everything's put into this tit-for-tat equal battle, and America is losing any sense of what's real, of who's accountable, of who is not accountable, of who's real, who isn't.
Right. Unbelievable. You know, if we don't solve this debt problem, it's going to, again, like our entitlement programs, it's going to push us off the cliff. And you think defaulting now would be a problem. Wait till you totally run out of money and have nothing if you think there's going to be serious consequences. And the fact what he was doing was basically saying the media should totally ignore conservatives because we don't have a good idea in our brain. This guy is off the cliff himself. But this is very typical of the way especially progressive liberals think. I'm not trying to forgive the progressive Republicans because they're just as bad or actually worse in some other ways. But we have a major, major problem because these people don't have any connection to reality. Now, Paul Krugman, columnist for the New York Times, the progressive. This is why they don't think debt is a problem. When people in D.C. talk about the deficits and debt, by and large, they have no idea what they're talking about. And the people who talk the most understand the least. Families have to pay back their debt. You and I have to pay our debts. Government don't. All they need to do is ensure that their debt grows more slowly than their tax base. Well, I'm sorry, but China's fed up with our overspending. And they are now directly assaulting the U.S. dollar to try to bring it down as the world's reserve currency. And when that happens, hundreds of trillions of dollars are going to come back to the United States immediately. And it will be worthless. China now owns $1.3 trillion of our bonds. And the inflation rate is going higher than the income that they're earning off of those bonds. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize why they're attacking the U.S. dollar. But Krugman doesn't have a clue. And neither do all the progressives. It's the progressives, mind you, that have taken $500 billion out of Medicare to pay for Obamacare. They keep saying that the Republicans are trying to bankrupt Medicare. I'm sorry, it was not the Republicans that downsized Medicare, it was the Democrats. Now, I'm not being partisan here, I'm talking specifically about the progressive Democrats. Finally, he said that we need more, not less government, spending to get us out of our unemployment trap. Well, I'm sorry, for every dollar that the government spends to create a job, you're taking about $1.50 out of the private sector of the economy that can't create jobs. Government cannot create enough jobs, period.
I think Paul Krugman was awarded the Nobel Prize for economics.
Yeah.
And Obama was also awarded the Nobel Prize.
Peace Prize.
Right.
Yes. For his running away from Iran, I think. And that, Yasser Arafat was another beneficiary, yes. And he says, the wrong-headed, ill-informed obsession with debt is still standing in the way. In other words, we're obsessed with debt. I'm sorry, I'm obsessed with debt. Because I can see the cliff coming if we don't resolve this debt issue. And right now, the progressives, both Republican and Democrat, are in control of both houses of Congress, and they need to be thrown out of office in November. Tell your parents, have them read my book. You need to read our book, my book. We are in trouble, folks. We are in big, big trouble. And it's your future that's going to be affected. Understand that. I don't want to be playing a downer here, but we need to start taking action. And it's not hopeless by any means. Then this last little piece here, I just cannot believe this.
It's possible to open a newspaper or watch cable news these days without hearing my Republican colleagues talk about the evils of job-killing regulations. That's in quotes. Each day they arrive in the Senate floor to rail against the safeguards that keep our water clean, our air fresh, and our minds safe. Republicans would have you believe that these common sense rules that check the greed of Wall Street banks, keep huge corporations honest, and stop big oil's unnecessary risk-taking are also causing small businesses great harm. My Republican friends have yet to produce a single shred of evidence that the regulations they hate so much do the broad economic harms they claim. That's because there aren't any. Conversely, there's plenty of evidence to prove those regulations save lives, prevent asthma attacks, and ensure mom and pops face a fair
there
fight against
no
these
evidence,
multinational
folks,
corporations
it's all made
and
up.
Moneyed interest groups. And there's plenty of evidence to prove that disasters like BP oil spill and the financial crisis of 2008 could have been prevented by better.
The laws already exist. They just weren't being followed. We don't need more laws. I'm going to just stop this about halfway
better,
through.
Better, stronger government watchdog regulations. But Republicans aren't relying on evidence as they propagate the myth of the...
Okay. I didn't go as far as I wanted it to. But nonetheless, I'll stop it there because we are out of time. The fact is that it's estimated that to implement Obamacare, it's going to require 100 million man hours. And he's saying that regulations don't matter, that they are not job killers. I'm sorry, he is totally wrong. I used to work for a private company, and the regulations that we had to face basically cost us at least 10, just in our region, the northeastern to the lake states, 10 employees to handle. Regulations hurt. Now, we need regulations. I'm not against regulations if they're well thought out and they are needed to prevent corruption, safety issues, and so forth. But when OSHA, for instance, has a regulation that the drinking fountain has to be exactly, say, 32 inches off of the floor, and yours is 33, and you have to send someone in there to move it, tear down the wall and move it, that is asinine. And yet, our government regulations are full of this kind of garbage. You need a permit to cut down a dead tree, right. Now, into modern psychiatry, Dr. Lyle Rossiter, 40 years of experience, wrote The Liberal Mind. And he said that under careful scrutiny, progressive, I call it progressive liberalisms because I put progressives often to their own category, distortions of the normal ability to reason can be only understood as a product of psychopathology. In other words, they don't have a full deck of cards. And yet they control us. They're in control of our political system, both at the federal, state, and local levels. They're in control of our judicial system. They're in control of our public education system. There are not that many of them. Yeah, they're in control of our emotions. It's surprising, the control of our media, our mainstream media. And there are not that many of them. There have been surveys done. There are about 40% of the American people, 42% I think it is, that call themselves Republicans or conservatives. I should say specifically conservatives. About 26 or 27% call themselves liberals. And of that, about 6% call themselves very liberal. And it's that 6 to 10% that are probably the progressives. But they have a tremendous aptitude to get into positions of power. They're usually very intelligent. But they have some screws loose. And as a consequence, they are putting us in jeopardy, dire jeopardy. I can't overemphasize that point. There can be very nice people, don't get me wrong. But they cannot see reality. And then finally this, maybe we'll end up with this one in the last couple minutes here. This is beautiful. This is Milton Friedman on the Phil Donahue show back in 1979. Milton died about, 6 or 7 years ago? But nonetheless, it is classic.
When you see around the globe the maldistribution of wealth,
this is Donahue,
the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, when you see so few haves and so many have-nots, When you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy. The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that. So that the record of history is absolutely crystal clear that there is no alternative way so far discovered of improving the lot of the ordinary people that can hold a candle to the productive activities that are unleashed by a free enterprise system.
But it seems to reward not virtue as much as ability to manipulate the system.
And what does reward virtue? You think the communist commissar rewards virtue? You think a Hitler rewards virtue? You think, excuse me, if you'll pardon me, do you think American presidents reward virtue? Do they choose their appointees on the basis of the virtue of the people appointed or on the basis of their political clout? Is it really true that political self-interest is nobler somehow than economic self-interest? You know, I think you're taking a lot of things for granted. And just tell me, where in the world you find these angels who are going to organize society for us?
Well,
I don't even trust you to do that.
Donahue, there's nothing he can say, right? Yep. I don't think there's... Oh, okay. Keynesian versus Austrian economics. I can't get into the actual fundamental theories, but Keynesian theories basically are what enamors the progressives. Austrian, and you'll have an Austrian economist here Wednesday, basically says you have to be able to produce something to get a growing economy. Keynesians believe that the government is the source of all wealth and creation and so forth, and Austrian says you have to work for it. Now, in 1912, Wilson started working on the Keynesian concept. His spending of gross domestic product went from 2% to 7%. Right now, by the way, it's 25%. Obama's taken us to 25%. Income tax on the rich went from 7% to 73%. Income tax on the poor went from 1% to 4%. Unemployment soared from 3% to 12%. And the economy tanked. Gross national product declined by 17%. When Harding took over, he died a year after he took office, and Coolidge took over, but he implemented Harding's plan. Spending of gross domestic product went from 7% down to 2%. That means slashing the size of the federal government at the time, which is very small compared to what it is right now. The income on tax on the rich went from 73% to 25%. Raising the income tax on the rich never works. It never works. But you have to understand that progressive mentality always looks at things in a linear way. They think they're great creative thinkers, but they are linear thinkers. I know. Let me finish this slide. You see her? See what she's doing to me? Basically, they are literally think along linear lines and cannot think out of the box. They're not critical thinkers whatsoever. They have one dimension, they have one cell that's maybe 5 miles wide of thinking. But that's it. They cannot think critically. And so if you raise the income tax on the rich, you're going to get more taxes, right? Never happens. You actually usually get less taxes because the producers have to take that tax out of what they're producing, and they can't hire people, they can't generate more income and so forth because it's money being taken away by the government, or they move offshore. When he reduced the income tax on the rich down to 25%, it's just boomed. The income tax on the poor went from 4% down to 2%, and unemployment went from 12%. By the way, our true unemployment today, if you calculate it the way they calculated it in those days, is now about 14.8%. Not the 8.2%. But nonetheless, went down to 2.4%, and their economy exploded into what are called the Roaring Twenties. Now, the progressives will blame the Roaring Twenties for the Great Depression. I'm sorry, that's not true history. They have revised your history books and so forth to say something totally different now, that the Roaring Twenties and all this free money and so money chasing after money was the cause of the Depression. It was not. It was the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve admits that now. Okay. My nick is about to be cut off. And so we're going to be done for tonight. Yes. I know. And I appreciate your attention. We'll see you in the morning to conclude our good discussion here.
That was part two of a four-part presentation of Dr. Michael Kaufman's Plundered. If you would like to get a copy of the book, go to www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. If you would like to get a copy of the DVD, which includes the PowerPoint presentations, go to www.campamerican.com. That's www.campamerican.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. Join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.